driven by three things. It's driven by young people between the ages of like 13 and maybe their late 20s. It's driven by the narcotics traffic that is prevalent in this community, and it's driven by the career criminal. You have to devise a plan that focuses on those three problem populations and getting them under control if you're really going to drive the crime rate down. We did it to the tune of 30% in the 2.5 years that our crime reduction plan was in place. So it can be done.
Well, Sheriff, you know, one of the things we were talking about, too, is the education here in Detroit, where with the schools, you can look at any major metropolitan area, any urban area. If you have kids that are not in school, you have a higher crime rate. You have problems going on. I mean, I've been an attorney here for many years and a former prosecutor, and I saw it every single time we go to court. You get a juvenile that's got nothing else going on or he's dropped out of school, you have an increased crime rate.
There's no question about that. That's why you have to focus on that. That's one of the populations that has to be the focus. We need to focus on getting them education. We need to focus on getting them recreation. And we need to focus on getting them some extended support beyond the family. You know, one of the things that people say all the time, you know, I'm an attorney like you are, and I've practiced law and probate, and I've dealt with the juvenile system, and I commanded the youth section, the child abuse unit, and the gang unit during the time that I was in the police department. So I spent about 13 years of my career focused on children who had issues in the Detroit community. So I clearly understand, and you have painted an accurate picture. What we need to do is focus on all of that, but the fact is, and I know you know this, there are parents in this community, no matter what we do to them, we have charged them, we have prosecuted them, they're not going to take care of their children. So we need to have to take an extra step, I believe, to give the children a little bit of extra support outside of that core family, because some of these children are in situations they didn't pick their parents, they didn't pick their grandparents, they didn't pick the rest of their family.
Right.
They just don't have the support base that they need in order to be assimilated into our society in a very effective way. We have to recognize that's a problem.
We're talking to Sheriff Benny Napoleon. We're talking about the problems of Detroit, and right now the issue of not just the crimes, but, you know, you touched on something that is, that Sheriff, is I have always been amazed that we always give deference, of course, to the natural parent. You have a situation with the Department of Human Services, or you have them trying to take away an otherwise negligent parent, right? And
Yes. We
have, obviously, foster care programs. We have different community and caseworker programs set up to help children and mentor children. And yet we're really always trying to place it back with the parent. And I'm not always so sure that's the best way to do it.
No, it should be really what's in the best interest of the child. Taking
right.
a child from a parent, I know, is a very, very difficult decision for folks to make. But how often have we seen those decisions of returning children back to a troubled home turn around and fail?
All the time. So much, yeah.
And so while we recognize that being in the home may be the preferred choice, but sometimes it's not the best choice. And we really need to focus on what is the best choice for the child based upon those particular circumstances that the kid is in and the parent's ability to parent. Some children are just better off somewhere else until parents demonstrate that they have the capabilities of taking care of a child.
Well, that's for sure. And, you know, especially when you talk about parents that have different ideas. Just for instance, you can have a parent, let's say, has a gun. And you know, we talk about gun control and what's going on in Detroit. You know, the responsible parents that are keeping their guns safe, the responsible gun owners, I mean, I believe in the Second Amendment, and I, you know, I've shot before, and I go target shooting with my friends, and you know what? If you have a responsible gun owner who's protecting his family but making otherwise responsible choices, I don't believe that's the problem. It's the irresponsible ones.
And the guns that are in the illegal stream of commerce are what creates the problem.
And isn't that really most of them? I mean, that's really the ones we can't control, is the ones
exactly.
That's in the illegal stream.
Responsible gun owners aren't the people that are causing problems. You know, I mean, I recognize that, you know, whenever we have one of these crises, and I'm a police officer. I've handled guns all my life. As a child, I hunted with my grandfather and my father. I joined the police department at 19 years old, so I'm very much grown up handling firearms. not a person who really, I think I have two guns in my house. I have one that they gave me from the police department when I retired, and my gun that I have from the sheriff's office. So I'm not really like a gun person, although I'm very comfortable being around guns and comfortable handling them. But, you know, the gun control debate is really a difficult one. What I, as a personal, my only position is that there's some guns that are basically weapons of mass destruction that maybe need to be more closely regulated. And that's those semi-automatic weapons and automatic weapons that get in the hands of folks that turn around and shoot at the police with them and shoot at, and they go into places. But, you know, hunting rifles, handguns that people are using for target shoot, I believe in the Second Amendment also. I'm just not certain that these weapons that are truly high-powered are weapons that need to be in the stream of commerce in the hands of the everyday citizen. But those are not law-abiding citizens are not normally the ones who are using them. It's usually someone who's got a mental problem or someone who's probably gotten a gun illegally. So it's a tough, tough debate, and it's a difficult one to weigh in on, to be real honest.
Well, I also appreciate those comments, too, because I've dealt with so many different situations with domestic violence where, you know, people really are using, they're not using the guns necessarily to use them in a crime other than domestically. They actually can threaten their spouse. I mean, but that really goes so much to substance abuse and the mental illness that they really have to deal with. With dealing with gun control. We're talking to Sheriff Benny Napoleon. You know, and the last thing, one of the things we want to talk about is how do we get the suburbs to cooperate with the city too? You know, for so many years, we had tension, of course, between the suburbs in Oakland County and Macomb County with Wayne County and getting people to want to, if nothing else, come down and feel safe in the city. I mean, I know we have to build it up safe for Detroiters, but we also have to make sure that the people coming to visit here from out of state and also from within our state feel comfortable coming downtown to Detroit.
No question. I've been talking to folks in the community about some things that I'm concerned about as a citizen and things that I see based upon my almost 40-year history of policing this town that I think need to be put in place, quite frankly, as this weather gets warm. I'm seeing some serious areas of concern here, and I've talked to folks in the business community about my concerns. Hopefully, they will take the experience that I've had in this community policing it for 40 years and do something. But you know, there are some serious issues that could arise if we don't do something different as we move forward into the summer and the warm weather. But you're right. I mean, we have to affirm Detroit as a safe city, not just downtown, but downtown, absolutely, and midtown. It has to be safe places, but the entire city has to be safe. Again, we have to get Detroit being a violent city out of the national discussion. And it needs leadership that understands how to fight crime. It's a very difficult thing, but it's not an impossible thing. You have to make public safety a top priority. And quite frankly, leadership for too long in this community have accepted a level of violence that is unacceptable. And that is the problem. We have thought, well, okay, you know, we go from 500 murders to 391. We've done something. No, we haven't. You know, we're still among one of the most violent communities in this country. You go from 120,000 Part 1 crimes down to 91 that we did, 30% reduction. Yeah, that's great, but we need to do better. And unfortunately, folks, as we do better, think they start shifting resources away from public safety because we're seeing the crime rate go down when, quite frankly, we need to shore it up because people are leaving the city of Detroit as residents and businesses predominantly for three reasons. Crime, the school system, which we talked about, and then the other issue that they're looking at is high taxes and high insurance and other things that it costs to live in the city of Detroit. So we have to change all of that if we're going to grow this city again.
All right. Well, Sheriff, thanks for coming on the show and give us your views. We'll keep an eye on you, obviously, through this election, and we'll get you back here again. We're talking to Sheriff Benny Napoleon, and obviously he's our Wayne County Sheriff, but also running for mayor of the city of Detroit. We'll be right back here on Courtside Radio. Stay tuned.
The following letter was written by Petty Officer Eric C., U.S. Navy Reserve. Thank you for all your support. As we endure some of the toughest times in our lives, it's comforting to know that you are here, alongside us in spirit. It gives me a sense of pride that can't be explained, only felt. And I would have never felt it had it not been for all of you.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
All right, let me ask you a legal question. How many lawyers do you know? How many lawyers do you trust? When you get in trouble or don't know the answer to a legal question, who do you call? Well, now you have a network of lawyers you can call right now at 800-7100-LAW. Hi, I'm Scott Weinberg, host of Courtside Radio. Any legal question you have deserves an honest answer. A lawyer you can trust. Don't just settle for anything less. Whatever legal question, text the word advice to 313131 or call 800-7100-LAW. If I can't answer the question, I'll make sure one of my lawyers will. Guaranteed. Text the word advice to 313131 or call 800-7100-LAW. That number again is 800-7100-LAW or text advice to 313131. Get the justice you deserve.
Are drugs affecting your family or a friend? Call Narcanon, 1-800-468-6933. Narcanon provides free assessment and referral services. Call Narcanon at 1-800-468-6933 or visit our website at stopaddiction.com.
Let's rejoin the Courtside Radio Show with your host, Attorney Scott Weinberg.
Welcome back to the show. Well, that was a very, I think, intuitive comment that the sheriff made. And, you know, we talked about a bunch of different things, but we were talking about not just Mayor Bloomberg's comments on the city of Detroit, which, you know, listen, he's just trying to promote his own city. He's trying to promote his own crime rate and keeping it down in the city of New York. He's just making comments like this. See, to me, we have to do about what these campaign managers for these teams are saying. We need to have the electorate, and we need to have the candidates focus and the conversation focus on the benefits of Detroit, not answer these questions of what other mayors are talking about. I mean, listen, we have to cover it, but it doesn't mean that we have to focus on it. And I'd rather focus on the issues of, like we're talking about with the sheriff, the education in Detroit. I'm telling you, you go do studies and you go look at what is the increase and decrease of a crime rate of a city. And one of the major factors is, are we keeping our kids in school? It seems almost innocuous. It seems, well, how does that directly relate? Okay, maybe they're not going to be educated, but those kids are out on the street. Those are the ones that, over 25 years of practicing, I'm telling you, those are the kids that get in trouble. And it's not just in the city. I'm telling you, you look at any statistic, even in a suburban area, where you don't have the teenagers involved in associations and involved in activities, that they're not graduating the high schools and getting involved. They have other influences. They have influence of people trying to keep them busy. I promise you, you have a teenager that is idle, and you have a problem. I mean, there's just no question about that. You have those issues with any kind of city. You know, here we focus on also the veterans in this great state of ours, and we have Veterans Hero of the Week. This week, we're going to be talking to retired Lieutenant Colonel John Wallace and his relationship with the vets here in the state of Michigan, and actually for many years. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you for joining the show.
And thank you for having me.
Lieutenant, you know, Colonel, what we were talking about, and just last week too, is how we get people that they, especially teenagers, but in this case, in this state, veterans, how we can get them to stay on track and to keep on track. And we were just talking to the sheriff of Wayne County, Benny Napoleon, and he's running, of course, for Detroit mayor. But one of the major things they have, the issues are, what do you do to have teenagers or to have people that don't have great influences at home stay on the right track. And I know you have that those issues because you run one of the mentor programs for the Veterans Court, and they also have those same kind of issues. You need positive influences and mentors to get back on track.
That's correct, and that's one of the strengths of the Veterans Court program, the relationship that's established between the mentor and the veteran who's been admitted into the program.
And isn't that, that is one of the best things. When we've had people on the Veterans Court and talking to hear about the veterans that come back and they struggle with health issues and mental health issues, but also substance use issues. And to get someone back on track in these courts, having a mentor, I think, is one of the best things. Just as if you're having a kid in school that dropped out of school that needs that kind of guidance. Tell me how the mentor program works with the Veterans Court.
Well, the way it works, I'm the coordinator for the Macomb County Veterans Treatment Court. And my primary responsibilities are to recruit, train, and assign the mentors as required. And what that means is that, for example, in Judge Potowski's court, who runs the court in Macomb County Circuit Court, I get notified a week ahead of time as far as what the docket is, which veteran's going to be appearing, and whether or not there are any new veterans who are going to appear. So let's say I've got a new veteran that's going to be assigned. I'm told the age of the veteran, the sex, the branch of service, what types of assignments he or she had, combat or non-combat. And I try to assign a mentor as closely as possible with those same characteristics, because it's been proven not only for the year or so that we've run our program, but it's been proven in courts that have been in operation for 2, 3, 4 years, that you have the most success when you have mentors as closely aligned as possible with the veteran, especially combat veterans.
Well, I think that the combat veteran, especially coming back here, you know, when you have someone that's got that post-traumatic stress, it doesn't always obviously show itself. You know, I've had it for years where clients will come back from as veterans, and you know they'll be doing okay, and then all of a sudden they get involved with problems and end up with the court system, and they hadn't really sought treatment. They hadn't sought treatment with the VA that has the resources. Many times, actually, they don't even know, or they're not even aware of the type of treatments that they can really get from the VA. And that's one of the things we try to support here, is at least get the word out to where veterans can when they're coming back from combat, and they all of a sudden find themselves here without support where there can be support.
Now, one of the things that is the strength of the program is the fact that we have a Veterans Administration representative in court and is a full-time member of the team. And in Macomb County, we've got two active Veterans Treatment Courts. As I mentioned earlier, Judge Potowski and Judge Kerry Fuca, who runs one in the 41B District Court. And once the veterans find out that the VA is there, they are given a tailored program specifically for the needs that they have. And that's proven to be an outstanding resource and benefit, because, as you say, a lot of these veterans don't even know what's available. Some of them are apprehensive about the VA. Some don't want anything to do with the government after the time they've been in the service. So it's just a very gratifying, rewarding experience to see how these veterans progress from the start of the program as they wend their way through the programs that have been tailored for them.
You know, we're going to have so many more vets coming back to the state of Michigan now that we're obviously tearing off and coming out of these areas. I mean, we really need, and this is what we also have different peoples like Sorrento's Pizza, and they really support the veterans coming back into this area, especially in Macomb County. And we need more local merchants and businesses trying to give them jobs. I mean, these are people that are trained in many different areas. They're trained in being a mechanic and electricians and sound engineers. And they come back and we don't employ them. We really need to have a focus on helping these people, not just obviously in the services that the VA, but in trying to encourage local merchants to hire them for really the skills they have.
I agree with that 100%. All the veterans are looking for is just a chance. Some of the concerns are with all of the publicity being provided to individuals who are coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injuries. Sometimes we're afraid that the general public perception is that all the veterans are that way. Well, that's not true. The majority of the individuals coming back are fine, healthy, and just want to have an opportunity to prove themselves, support their families, and continue to be productive members of society.
We're talking to retired Lieutenant Colonel John Wallace, and that is really true, that people's perception when vets come back, I mean, it's different than when they came back from Vietnam, obviously. When they came back from Vietnam, it seems like we just totally forgot about it. We didn't accept it in any way. We're much more accepting now in this day and age for veterans, and I feel support them even when they're over there, much more than we did, obviously, in Vietnam. I mean, we've created a different culture when they come back now, don't you think?
I agree, and one of the things that happened in Judge Statolsky's court a couple of months ago, we've got a very active veterans Vietnam chapter here in Macomb County, Chapter 154, and by title, most of the members are Vietnam veterans, and they vow that the returning veterans today will receive better treatment than they received when they came back, for example. They've created a distinctive medal that whenever they find out about a vet who's returned from Afghanistan or Iraq, for example, they have a formal ceremony and present that medal to those veterans. We had just such a ceremony at the beginning of the court session for Judge Statolsky, and that proved to be a very emotional event because in the judge's court, you've also got family members who are out there who attend the session. And that's just one example of how the Vietnam vets are trying to the best of their ability to make sure that today's returning vets are treated in a much more professional and humane manner than they were when they came back from Vietnam.
You know, we talked about one of the issues when they come back, and not even anybody that has mental health or even substance issues when they come and after they come back, but people that are trained in a specific area, do you feel that we retrain them? So, for instance, when they come back, obviously they're trained in some type of area. It might not always relate specifically to what they can do in the private sector. Do you feel that we have services to retrain the veterans so they can get other types of jobs or other skills here?
Well, those services are available, but one of the things that the Veterans Administration is trying to do with the respective states is, for example, if you've got an individual who was a truck driver in the military, that should be significant enough as far as experience is concerned to not have to go through any additional certifications or registration. Same thing with individuals who were nurses or warrant officers who were, in essence, surgeons. They're trying to ease the burden on certifications for the veterans so that they can transition much more quickly into the civilian sector as far as getting a job is concerned.
Yeah, I do believe that one of the issues of getting people to not only join the military on a voluntary basis that we have now is also making sure, like we talked about, that they have the services, and we owe it to provide those services and to help them get retrained when we get back, but also with education too. I mean, so many people say that they join, and I see this all the time, that kids coming out of school join the military because they're coming from families that don't have the resources to send them to post-secondary school education. And they know that if they commit and can provide for the community by volunteering, that when they get out, they will have some kind of education. Or providing education for them. And I think that was one of the greatest things that happened, is providing this GI Bill or trying to provide some kind of education to our veterans.
Well, that's true. The GI Bill that's currently in effect is much more generous than the one that my generation in the military had. But I'm not going to begrudge the current veterans anything because they earned it. And one of the things that we need to keep in mind as a society, I don't have the quote exactly committed to memory by George Washington, but basically Washington says that individuals who either are serving or are contemplating on serving in the military observe how previous veterans are treated, and will gauge whether or not they are willing to participate based upon that treatment. And I've got somewhat of a concern, especially now in the current fiscal environment that we find ourselves in this country, is that we're going to start going back to the environment where the government's going to be looking for ways to cut. And one of the first areas they cut is the active military, retired military, the Guard and Reserves. And at least three times during my lifetime, that's proved to be very unfortunate as far as terms of retention and readiness. And I just hope that we don't go down that road again.
We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel John Wallace. Well, thank you for coming on the show and telling us all about what's going on, basically not just with the Veterans Corps and their mentor program, but more generally about here, what's going on in the state of Michigan. But I can tell you that we appreciate your continued support for veterans, and we do that all the time here on Courtside Radio. We try to get at least people to go out and support any of your veterans organization. If you see a vet, you know, sit down and have a chat with them. I'm telling you, I do it all the time. I'll just be in a restaurant and I'll sit down and I'll see a vet, especially out there in Selfridge area. And it's always it's great conversations, and you'd be surprised the kind of experience they have and things you can learn personally from them. Colonel, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Here on Courtside Radio, we'll be right back.
After Sergeant Matthew Kyle was injured in Iraq, his young wife Tracy faced the daunting task of getting their VA benefits.
There's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of forms to fill out.
For years, paralyzed veterans trained experts have helped injured veterans and their families. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that veteran's entitled to.
To help, visit pva.org.
All right, let me ask you a legal question. How many lawyers do you know? How many lawyers do you trust? When you get in trouble or don't know the answer to a legal question, who do you call? Well, now you have a network of lawyers you can call right now at 800-7100-LAW. Hi, I'm Scott Weinberg, host of Courtside Radio. Any legal question you have deserves an honest answer. A lawyer you can trust. Don't just settle for anything less. Whatever legal question, text the word ADVICE to 313131 or call 800-7100-LAW. If I can't answer the question, I'll make sure one of my lawyers will. Guaranteed. Text the word ADVICE to 313131 or call 800-7100-LAW. That number again is 800-7100-LAW or text ADVICE to 313131. Get the justice you deserve.
Some look up to the Man of Steel and others follow lines in the web. But I look up to my real life icon, my dad. And calling him anything less than great would be misguided. In his warm arms, I confided all of my fears. And as my time to rear others grows near, I'm reminded that women marry men just like their fathers. And I hope that's true. Anything less, might as well not even bother.
A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative, the Ad Council, and this radio station. Visit fatherhood.org for more information. Have you been a dad today?
Let's rejoin the Courtside Radio Show with your host, Attorney Scott Weinberg.
We're back here on Courtside Radio on 1130 WDFN and streaming on iHeartRadio. We want to thank everybody and have them support, obviously, the Lady Janes and also Sorrento Pizza. They support our vets, and we want to support them. I want to congratulate my daughter, Danielle, from graduating from Michigan State University. It was always great, and just right after that PSA, the fatherhood, I felt like a great father yesterday, having a great time at that. Man, what a great event they have up there at Michigan State. We always had a celebrating with all the other parents. So congratulations to all the MSU grads and also my daughter, Danielle, who, of course, now is going to be a Wolverine going to U of M for a master's program. So we enjoyed that. And hopefully next week, I think we're going to be keeping on with this Detroit campaign. We're going to have Mike Duggan, and we're going to ask him those questions regarding how we're going to help the city of Detroit, and also we're going to be able to try and see what we can do to get out of this image of Detroit being basically the capital of crime, as opposed to what we want to do is the business area of the world. Stay tuned on Courtside Radio. We'll be back next week.